Hello, all, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. This week, I'm introducing you to Jean Kennedy, who has not only been my friend for a couple of decades, but was also my chiropractor when I lived in Portland, Oregon. Jean has been a staunch advocate of my podcast, and when she mentioned that she might have a tale to tell, I immediately booked her on the show. Now, she's had an interesting life and went into being a chiropractor because of personal challenges of her own. She had her own health and movement challenges, which encouraged her to follow this path. And while the path was a little bit circuitous, she's now doing the work that she was always meant to do. And Jean will tell you a little bit more about that later, but she's also a badass musician. And when I'm on social media, I am always seeing her on stage somewhere, rocking it out, making people dance, and in general, encouraging everyone to have fun. So to say that she contains multitudes would be the understatement of the century. And her miracle story this week, well, it might seem like it's a simple one to you, but again, it reiterates that if we're open and if we're willing to understand the synchronicities or hear or see the messages the universe is sharing with us, well, then we can connect in ways that are pretty profound. So now, without further ado, here's my interview with Jean Kennedy.
I gave the eulogy and I had to like prepare it ahead of time and send it so that they could review it to make sure that like I wasn't gonna be a smarty pants. You know what I'm saying? Like they wanted it to be like very reverential, which it was. And I talked a lot about my parents and like their relation to the church and their faith and, you know, what I remember them doing, you know, which was, you know, really walking the talk, you know, back in the day. I introduced myself as Dr. Jean Kennedy. I'm a 23-year chiropractor in Portland, Oregon. I have a specialty practice in applied kinesiology. And I'm kind of a rock and roller as a side hustle. I have a house that's littered with instruments. And, you know, so I kind of get to do two things that I really love. I really love my work. And life's not bad right now. There's been a lot of music this year. So that's usually what I wind up talking about is, you know, my work. And then, you know, if people know I'm a musician or they meet me in the context of music.
There you go. There you go. And yeah. I have to say that it always brightens my day and makes me so happy when I'm on social media. And there I see you again at another show, like on stage performing another show. And I just thought, oh my gosh, she's so prolific. You're so prolific. You're always out there playing music and like badass music too, by the way. So I'm so curious. Like, I love this. Were you called to music when you were a kid or how did that happen?
Yeah. I mean, I was like, I always would just sit and listen to records when I was a kid. And I have this great, like, kind of Super 8 style home movie from probably the 60s. I mean, I bet I was like 3 or 4 years old. And I had gotten a little piano for Christmas, like a toy piano. And I'm super into it. And then one of my brothers got a little drum set and my other brother got a guitar. And so they're like, we just have this super cute video of like our little fake family Christmas band. That was kind of it for that because of my family. Like I'm really kind of the only one, my immediate family anyway, I'm the musician, you know, I'm the one that just has always played instruments, but I mean, I just always loved being under headphones. When I was a kid, I would just sit and listen to like albums on the turntable. Like I'd go out to somebody's car and just like listen to the A-track. You know, I just wanted to be like around music. If somebody would come to our house who could play piano, I would just be obsessed, you know, to see somebody else like play the piano that I would practice my little piano lessons on, you know, because we did get a piano, a real one, not just the toy one. yeah, so I just have a lot of memories of going to piano lessons. And like I stopped playing piano in high school. I wish I hadn't, but I did. And, you know, kind of got more into going to concerts and seeing other people perform, you know, but just always having an ear for music and like kind of the more parts it had, the better. You know, like I was a Deadhead in high school and like I, you know, saw the Grateful Dead a bunch of times and, you know, kind of like memorized all their songs. You know, I just had always a ability to like hear music as it was happening and then kind of remember it. When I started playing guitar in my 20s, I just kept learning more and more about music, you know, and then eventually I became a bass player because everybody needed a bass player and it seemed to be the easiest access to get into bands to play with other people. Unless I was just going to be like a really good guitar player singer, which I just didn't think that was really who I was anyway, to be like, you know, like a Joni Mitchell or like, you know, somebody who like is alone on stage, like with, you know, with a gorgeous voice. You know, my voice is a little bit gritty. and I get too scared, you know, if I'm on stage by myself. It's better now. Like, I don't really have stage fright anymore, you know, but yeah.
Yeah, stage fright is something that I talk about a lot. Just like getting up and speaking in front of people completely terrifies me. But yeah. I did want to say, what a singular talent to listen to a piece of music, you know, maybe 1, 2, 3 times and then be able to recreate it and put it out there. I mean, that's actually pretty fabulous. How did you evolve into becoming a chiropractor?
Well, I needed work, you know, and I was working in kind of short-term restaurant gigs, which I honestly wasn't good at, you know. I have like I have a little bit of like kind of dyslexia and like my legs aren't that great. Like my body is not super able. Like I'm not 100% able and I never have been. So I was like, you know, what am I going to learn? And I wanted to go back to school and, I thought I would try, to be a physical therapist because there seemed to be jobs. I didn't think nursing was the thing, you know, I just wanted like to have a skill where I could go somewhere and make money because, you know, I lived on my own since I was a late teenager. I left home kind of early and I lived in just all kinds of like low income situations. So I thought I'm going to be a physical therapist. And I went to Portland State for 2 years doing pre-PT stuff. And I would go to the hospitals in the area and observe in the PT departments. And I thought, okay, well, I'm going to do this. But then it just got super competitive. Like it went from a profession where they needed people to being like, okay, we have enough. And like now it's going to be super hard to get into these programs. And, you know, I'd already kind of directed myself, you know, into like an interest of physical medicine. And plus I have a disability, you know, so that kind of made me want to learn more about how people get therapy because I had never had any physical therapy in my life, even though I have like a deficit. So I was like, okay, I guess I got to take care of this myself, you know? So I thought, well, I'll go to chiropractic school because I already did a lot of the prereq coursework for it. And I thought, I'm going to get a bunch of body work. You know, I'm going to be in school learning how to do work on bodies. And I'm also going to get a bunch of work done on my body, which in my 20s, I really needed. Like, I had a lot of hip pain. You know, I was working on my feet, you know, doing food service, and just like I was in pain all the time. It seemed to be like very easy access to get into chiropractic school. They were like, great, come to chiropractic school. We want you here. And I was like, okay, this is great. And I saw that, you know, you were able to have a real variety of different specialties and focuses as a chiropractor. And I thought that was really interesting too.
I think that's so kind of fabulous that, I mean, I think it's very interesting actually that you know, you were in this program and all of a sudden everybody was in the program. And so that you're not there, you know, you're like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? But you knew intuitively, you sensed, you know, the body is where it's at because I need help. You know, I need yeah. something. And then the chiropractic is right there. And it's like, as they say, and the rest is history. And that's absolutely what's happened for you. I can testify to the fact that you were an incredible chiropractor, very intuitive, really amazing in what you do. But I'm sure that knowledge, it came over time. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I'm still learning all the time. All the time. I mean, I felt like when I first got out of school with my degree, I did not feel confident, you know? So I just went to work basically on anybody that was willing to let me work on them. And I learned so much, you know, just in the first like 5 years out, you know, like in chiropractic, until you've been in practice 10 years, you're considered a new doctor. So if you've been in practice less than 10 years, like you're still kind of considered a newbie, you know, and I think that's fair, you know, because there's a lot of correlations that are like not necessarily physiological that you just kind of learn from working on people, you know, like, oh, you know, if this is happening, I should really check the ankles. I should really check the TMJ. The shoulder's not moving, so I better work on the elbow, you know, stuff like that. Like you kind of learn how to be a holistic practitioner from seeing a lot of people, you know. And when I got turned on to applied kinesiology, which is my specialty, which I think I was into when we met, you know, I was a muscle tester, but I was still kind of a new muscle tester, but still, like, it gives you access to those correlations that, you know, are not necessarily like a nerve that goes from one thing to the other. You know, it's more energetic. Like there is a lot of kind of like holographic, energetic relationships between things. And, you know, you can do a lot for people when you start to recognize patterns and you're seeing, you know, the same type of like asymmetry in a rib cage or, you know, in the hips or in the kneecaps. Like I just look at kneecaps almost first on people and like there'll almost always be one kneecap that's higher than the other. And, you know, stuff like that. I work on legs so much.
I don't think
long-winded. You
know, what?
That was, I don't even remember the original question.
Oh, no, you're perfect. Whoa. Perfect. I was going to say about the legs, I think a lot of people, you know, walk through this world or go through this world and they kind of normalize their pain and they keep going and they keep going until it becomes so acute and they think, I can't live like this anymore. And I'll never forget that I woke up one day in Portland in bed and my jaw was, I couldn't open my mouth. I could not, I was like, what is going on? And after a few hours, I was able to open it and it got loose. And I had never heard of anything like that before. So of course I went on the internet and I looked and I was like, oh my God, TMJ, what do I have? Oh my gosh. And that's one of the things you and I worked on. And I think a lot of people Well, I see a chiropractor here in Santa Fe now who uses an adjuster or it's something. It's like
activator.
Activator, yeah. And so there's lots of different ways to be a chiropractor, but you actually worked inside my mouth, which I thought was, I've never heard of that before.
I just did that today. I mean, I still do that on most people I see. TMJ issues, big part of my practice, a big part. And again, like, you know, there's asymmetries in the cranium that show you which side is kind of the bad side. There's usually one side that's worse than the other. But like people have all these adhesions kind of where like the palate meets the cheek, you know, kind of like, you know, there'll be like little tight spots in there. Or sometimes people really have knots in their cheeks. Yeah, a lot of that.
And we don't even realize it. You know, these repetitive behaviors or these compensations that we're doing to like get through our day, they can get a lot worse a lot faster. Right. And it's interesting all the different modalities that you can, you know, use to help alleviate pain or alleviate what's going on with you. Can you describe what applied kinesiology is?
Yeah, applied kinesiology is challenging muscles to see if they're able to properly facilitate to command. So basically, like you position, you know, the leg or you know the arm to test a shoulder muscle, and I'll say like, you know, hold this here, or don't let me push this down, or hold this position, and if the person's unable to hold the position, and this is with like very specific isolation of the, you know, like you're able to actually check individual muscles. And if it doesn't properly facilitate, it's, you know, it's called a weakness or weak muscle, but really it's an improper inhibition. It's an inhibited muscle improperly. So you're basically just like doing things so that muscles properly facilitate and inhibit, because muscles are supposed to do both. Like there's a proper, you know, pattern of, you know, strong, weak. And that's what makes your legs move so that your, you know, skeleton can move around, is the symphony of muscles that are properly turning on and off to move joints. That's like classic applied kinesiology, is to know how to assess the individual muscles to make sure they're firing correctly. That was kind of like the original, but like it has really grown into, you know, more like nervous system testing, where you just use, you know, kind of an arm held out straight and you push on the arm and you can do challenges again to see if there's a proper response. But it's not really a muscle response, it's a nervous system response. So applied kinesiology is a very like holistic way of doing chiropractic, because it gives you outcomes. You can find weaknesses or problems, do the treatment, and then retest in that same appointment, and, you know, have some assurance that you're going the right direction with it.
Now I actually know what it is, because I mean, I've had it done before, but I did not know exactly what was going on. So thank you.
Yeah.
My second question always is, did you grow up in a religious household? And, you know, if so, how did that kind of evolve over time for you as far as your connection to, you know, source or spirit or whatever words or language that you use?
Yeah. Yes, I did grow up in a religious household. Roman Catholic, Irish Catholic, East Coast Irish Catholic, Jeannie Kennedy, little Jeannie Kennedy, in Connecticut. And my parents were faithful. I just actually got to go back to my hometown for my parents' memorial service. Both my parents have passed away in the last year and a half. And me and my siblings decided that we were going to gather in Connecticut in our hometown. And we had a service for my parents in the old church that we all went to, except it wasn't the original building. It was actually a different church, but it was still the same congregation. The school that I went to Catholic school for 8 years. We all did. We all went to this Catholic elementary school that is there now where the church is. My father was a lector in the church. So he was always up on the altar, leading the music, singing. He was a beautiful singer, reading the gospel, kind of really, really leading things, doing a lot of the heavy lifting, really. You know, plus he cared for the church, because before the church moved to this new building, there was like this 19th century brick, stained glass, big wooden archways, like gorgeous old church. And that was where we used to go to church. Big arch door, big ancient, you know, ancient for America. I mean, I've been to Italy, like there's some crazy stuff over there, but like this was, you know, for America, this is an old church. And when my parents were like in their 50s, there was all this, you know, thing happening where they were going to sell that church building and build a new church. And it really broke my father's heart. He was super annoyed about it. And he had the opportunity to retire, and my parents moved away. And, you know, we kind of are wondering like how much of that influenced their decision to move away. Because he, you know, he was always so involved in the church, and he didn't think that they needed to sell the building and build a bigger one. So this visit that I just took, where I got to see this new church, was super interesting. And, you know, just kind of feel the whole vibe. And it really made me remember what it was like to go to church when I was a kid with my parents, where the vibe was totally different. Like, we had really cool people that we went to church with, and the priests were like very much like down with the people, you know? And like the new scene really seems a lot more not like that, you know? Like I didn't really feel a big connection with the service. I gave the eulogy, and I had to like prepare it ahead of time and send it so that they could review it to make sure that like I wasn't gonna be a smarty pants, you know what I'm saying? Like they wanted it to be like very reverential, which it was. And I talked a lot about my parents and like their relationship to the church and their faith, and you know what I remember them doing, you know, which was, you know, really walking the talk, you know, back in the day.
I have to say that that's the first time I've ever heard that someone who's going to give the eulogy has to send it ahead of time for pre-approval. That just kind of gobsmacks me. I can't believe that. I mean, anyways, even if you were a smarty pants, it would have been amazing and wonderful. Yeah. And I give two thumbs up to you being a smarty pants.
Thank you.
But it sounds like
I was very respectful.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm so sure. But it sounds like for your father, what happened was, you know, when they decided to sell the old church, it was his home, and it was home for like a lot of people. And, right. You know, right. Having to like shift and pivot and change, you know, and leave your home is devastating. Yeah. For a lot of people.
Yeah. My father was a technician, and he could fix anything. And he fixed everything in that old church. And it had a bell and a tower. He like fixed the bell in the tower. It wasn't working. And like there's this pattern of bell ringing called the Angelus bells. I had to look this up. And like, that was his job. He'd go like before work in the morning to the church to ring the Angelus bells for like, you know, the elderly people that would go to church every day. Like they would hear those bells and like, so moving, right? Like, you know, he just had his hands on every part of that old building. His weekends, you know, he would sometimes lead more than one mass on the weekends, and then plus be there for the weekday early morning.
I love all of this.
Oh, full time. Yeah.
Yeah, he works full time. That's absolutely, yeah. I mean,
I know.
Bless his dedication.
Their church, you know, so much money. Like they paid for all of us to go to the school. They were the church.
I do want to just say, side note, I'm so sorry to hear about the loss of your mother and father.
Thank you.
I think I saw a little something about it on social media, but I didn't understand that it happened in such a, you know, in a year and a half. I'm so sorry about that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's rough. But, you know, they were both in their 90s and, you know, they kind of lived on their own terms, you know. My mother died in their house and, you know, that was a year after my father passed. And yeah, you know, it's not easy, but, I feel like they just did everything the way they wanted to. So I'm proud of them for that.
Yes. It is not easy or fun getting old in America. I mean, good for them for staying in their house because that's also challenging and difficult. It's difficult for the kids too, right? Because you want them to be safe. And it's like, what does that look like? And what a huge blessing that they got to stay in their house. What a huge gift.
Yes.
Well, thank you for sharing that. It like warms my heart so much to know about the dedication and devotedness of your father. I mean, how beautiful. But I also, my heart aches for that move and that change of scenery for him. So would you consider yourself still Roman Catholic or how did you arrive at where you are today?
I mean, I hear people using the phrase cultural, they're cultural Catholics. And I think that definitely fits, just because I still kind of acknowledge that spiritual upbringing, you know? I mean, I am still very much practicing in the sense of like empathy, ethics. I mean, my parents were kind of social justice Catholic, I mean, you know, more my father. My mom was kind of a traditional Catholic, but my father was really kind of like a socialist Catholic. Like when you do things for the community, just to make sure everybody's okay. You know, I got that from him. And, you know, my parents were like New York Catholics, which I think kind of just had a different vibe because they grew up in the city. And that always just intrigued me. You know, that experience of like, you know, going through the Depression, like, you know, being a teenager in the city. Oh, mutual aid is the phrase I was looking for, you know. I mean, my father used to do mutual aid as a practice. And that's to me, that is the value that I think I carry from Christianity and from Roman Catholicism. That being said, I mean, I do have a spiritual connection when I do my work, but it's not from Jesus or from God, even though like I will definitely take that support. you know, I feel like I have spiritual support in my work, and I have I have abilities that I don't think are from Catholicism. You know what I mean? Just kind of knowing that I use in my work, even though I'm a good chiropractor, you know what I'm saying? Like sometimes I have to kind of minister to people in a way that seems above and beyond. So, you know, I just try and keep the vibe high. Yeah. But I don't go to mass, even though I think sometimes like I should be doing something, because it's just so easy to get socially isolated these days and you don't have that third place.
I agree, especially with all the news on loneliness and people longing for community and belonging, and just it seems to be like escaping them. Thank you for that, because I definitely know about this other way of knowing, especially, I mean, it totally makes sense what you're saying to me. I'm understanding what you're saying with the work that you do. For as long as you've done it, there is also, you know, if you do it long enough or if you're talented enough, there's another way of also knowing what's going on in the body or what's happening with people. And, you know, it's a superpower. So why not use it to help heal people? So, I mean, I absolutely love that. I love it. So thank you for telling me that. Well, you know, the main question of the podcast, I'm so excited to hear your stories because you said there was more than one. Yay. I would love to hear anything you'd like to share, anything that's happened in your life that you have considered to be magical or mysterious even, or miraculous. I'd love to hear any and all that you'd like to share.
Well, you know, I wanted to tell you, I got excited because something happened in Connecticut and I feel like my father has performed his first miracle. And when it happened, I was like, this is what I'm going to tell Kirsten. It's the miracle of the cheesecakes. The miracle of the cheesecakes happened. My father, you know, New Yorker, loved cheesecake. And he would make cheesecake for the holidays, you know, when company was coming. Like, he was known for his cheesecakes. And my sister, for the memorial, made cheesecake. She's kind of taken that role. She bakes a lot. And she made two cheesecakes for us to share after the services. And, you know, when you take a cheesecake out of the oven and you let it cool, it cracks. And she made two cheesecakes, and each one cracked in the shape of one of my father's initials, Thomas Kennedy. One of them had a T-shaped crack, and the other one had a K-shaped crack. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. Yes, that's absolutely bonkers. Oh my gosh.
Cheesecake miracle.
Well, I love that because, you know, the miracles in the Bible have names, you know, miracle of the loaves and fishes, et cetera, et cetera. And I love that there's now one that's the miracle of the cheesecakes. That's utterly fabulous. He was like, okay, I'm going to put my twist on this. This is what's happening right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I felt them with us so much. Like, I mean, I feel them. I feel they're here, you know, when I'm telling these stories. You know, I'm really interested in that, you know, in death and like, you know, the transformation of death. You know, as I get older, I think about it a lot, you know, and especially just, you know, having this big thing, you know, in our family, which is difficult. And I dreaded it my entire life, you know, when I was going to be separated from them. But in the end, it was time for them to go. You know, there's a certain like gift in being able to die of old age. It feels less difficult in the end, you know, even though, of course, it is, you know, but I think about it and I don't know. I think about death a lot.
Well, it's such a mystery, right? And it's almost right now, as using Star Trek language, our final frontier. I mean, there's a lot of other frontiers, but death is like the great mystery. And the number of times I've had guests come on the show and just tell me these absolutely bonkers stories of what happened, you know, in their lives around death and the death of a loved one, really has made me consider what that transition or that threshold really is.
Right.
What it can look different for different people. But in American culture, especially, we have a really sick attitude towards death. It's very confrontational. It's very aggressive. It's very like death is the enemy. And it's something to conquer. And I'm not saying
or faux pas. Like, that's how I always thought it seemed like, oh, I died. Oh, that's, I'm sorry about that. You know, like, oops, I died.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like, somehow you're not going to, because every one of us is going to.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the miracle of the cheesecakes, because I feel like we should write some sort of Bible verse around that. But, I just, that image of him coming back and saying, oh, these cheesecakes, huh? Okay. Let's see, what kind of mark can I put on these? And I love, because it's a special meaning for your family, right? It is so perfectly understandable to you as a family because of his affinity for cheesecake, the ability that he had to make cheesecakes, which were absolutely delicious, but he wanted you to know that he was there. And he was watching what was going on. I think that's really beautiful. And in signature style, right? Literally, his signature is like signature style.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He had a beautiful signature.
I love that. Oh, my goodness. I am so sorry to hear about the passing of both your parents. I can't even imagine this past year has been completely overwhelming for you. So, I mean, and thank you for sharing that story, because it's very personal. It's very, it's like, I don't know. It kind of tells me that your father had a, what was the church going to be afraid that you were going to be a smartass? It sort of makes me feel like your father was a little bit of a smartass.
He absolutely was. He was an Aquarius, first of all, you know. He was just a quirky man, but he was very righteous. He like studied the Bible. He had a, you know, Bible study group. He knew his scripture, and, you know, he wasn't afraid to get into it with authority. You know, when we had this memorial service and they were doing the sacrament, where, you know, people go up and receive the sacrament, the priest announced that it was only for practicing Catholics, active practicing Catholics, which they never used to say. Like, I don't ever remember that even being ever said, like, for a funeral or anything like that, that, you know, you only get this if you are up to date on your whatever, you know. And I thought, oh man, my dad would hate that. You know, he'd be so annoyed. And so, you know, me, the heathen, like, I'm watching everybody go up that I know doesn't go to church, you know, my siblings and stuff. And I'm like, I'm not going up there. But afterwards, I'm going up there, you know, because I knew I was going to go up there and speak, you know. So I'm like, all right, I'm just going to sit right here. And then I'm going to go up there. And I thought, yeah, that's my dad.
Babies, there you go. I hope you love Jean just as much as I do. She's actually such a spectacular human being and so fun, and I love the way she sees the world. What I especially just adore about her is that she sees this inequity, she sees this inequality, she sees this way of ostracizing and keeping others separate within that church, and her soul is like, no.
No, that's not okay with me. And in her own small way, she is making a statement for the equality and the righteousness of all other human beings, no matter their religious affiliations and no matter how they walk in this world. To find out more about this brave and beautiful human being, there will be a link in the episode's show notes. Please do click on it and check out the work that she does. And just in general, check her out because she is a badass. For all of you who haven't done so, ratings and reviews are where it's at. So please consider clicking on whatever platform you're on and giving this podcast a rating or review. My heart will eternally thank you. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Jean. See the magic in even the smallest occurrences in your world, because the universe isn't always going to just blast you with a message or call you on the phone and say, hey, here's a message. No, sometimes the messages are subtle. Sometimes those messages are quiet. And sometimes we have to still ourselves and quiet our minds so that we can understand what's being shown to us. So be like Jeannie and be open to those messages, no matter how large or small they are. And pretty soon, I suspect, you too will be co-creating with this universe, with the magic that is behind the scenes of all that we can see. And with that, I know, I don't just suspect, but I know that your life will become even more radiant and beautiful than it has ever, ever been before. Ugh, I hate that exclusionary stuff. You know,
it's not how it used to be. It's just not, you know. I mean, I think that it just was way more down to earth and way more inclusive, you know, and, you know, now it's like, you know, they're wondering why nobody's going, you know what I'm saying? You know, if it's going to be like that, you know, that we
agreed,
have
agreed.
What's that?
I said agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And I kind of am in love with the image of your father witnessing all this and just being appalled. excuse me, did you see the cheesecakes over there?
Yeah. His first miracle.
Well, I would love to hear any other stories that you'd like to share if you feel like sharing. There's no pressure.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you what I've been into lately. Here at the office, I have these flower essences that I've been working with, and they're not mine. They're from this chiropractor that I met like 20 years ago. And he seemed like he was really kind of tapped into something. He was a flower psychic, kind of like the flower. He said the flowers told him what they were for. And he would travel around the world collecting these flower essences. And they're really interesting and they're really powerful energy. And when I do my work, like, it'll change a muscle. You know what I'm saying? Like when I talk about like muscles that aren't firing properly, like the right flower essence, you know, it's like that with applied kinesiology. Like you can use so many things to affect the nervous system. But anyway, I've got these test kits of these different flower essences, and it sat in a drawer for like years. And I was inspired to pull them out for somebody, you know, because they affect thoughts or feelings, you know, that are limiting, I guess, self-limiting beliefs. And I have this test kit, and all the little individual vials have a little sprayer on them. So I can actually like dose somebody with a flower essence and they don't even have to buy it, you know? So I've just been doing these flower essences like as a bonus. You know, if someone's on my table, I'm like, let's pick a flower essence, you know? And that's been super cool. You know, sometimes when you give somebody the right thing, it's like their whole face changes, you know, like the color comes back or their face gets softer. Everybody has to wear a mask in my office. So I'm like, take off your mask and stick out your tongue. And then I just, you know, spray a little flower essence on their tongue and keep going. So that's been really sweet. And I think management should just have a flower essence church, you know. I mean, I always kind of joke about like starting a church because I am a little bit of a smart ass. And, you know, I have this like definitely not divinity school level, you know what I'm saying? Like so much respect. But like I got the certificate that I got from the Church of the Internet, you know. So, you know, that's always a thing that I'm thinking, like, in fact, like, you should just come to Portland so we can start our church. You know, I thought that, like,
yeah,
that would be so great. We kind of need something new around here.
Yes, these are the rumors I've heard. I do want to tell you, just as an aside, I have been on and off flower essences for like 20 years. And they are, it's crazy. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I even have made dosage bottles for other people, like been a practitioner a little bit. They just are insane. And I know people like they're doubting Thomas's and they're like, oh, no. Like, no, that's not. But no, really, really, they work. And it's crazy pants. And it goes back to what indigenous peoples have been saying, that every flower has a personality, that it has a spirit associated with it, that you know, it resonates, what the flower is or how it is in the world resonates with a malady or an affliction that someone might have, especially in South America with the indigenous tribes and all the plants, the plethora of amazing plants down there and how they can cure people. You know, and they look at the plant and they're like, oh, that's what that plant is for. But also, I mean, I find the story of your chiropractic friend who created the flower essence is super intriguing because there are some people that the plants choose to commune with and talk to and tell them things. And who knows how they pick one person over another. But it is medicine that I think we all need. It is so effective and magical and beautiful and also safe. It's safe. Yeah. So why not use whatever you can to get back into health?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.